The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, with all that's going on in the news, is that the only stuff that's important to God? Doesn't God care about the little things, too? The times when we stop to smell the roses, as they say. Yes, my friends, God cares about anything important to you, short of sin. Well, actually, he even cares about your sin, just not in the same way you do. But yes, those smaller, seemingly unimportant matters can also have an effect upon our day. In fact, let's face it, most of our days are made up of these little things. Personally, I find the subtle pleasures and subtle annoyances quite interesting, especially when they overlap. Sometimes even the pleasant makes us think about the not so pleasant because it's unavoidable. 2 weeks ago, I had just a wonderful time at Disneyland. Now, life seldom gets more pleasant than that. Yes, I was at Disneyland with my lovely wife and my beautiful daughter, my son-in-law, and my grandson. It was his first time at Disneyland, just about a year and a half years old. We had a fantastic time. Now, on one of the 2 days that we were there with them, we visited the newer park, Disney's California Adventure, and I hear, rumor has it, that they may be changing the name. They're going to change the name of Disney's California Adventure, and it makes me wonder, Disney's Sanctuary State Adventure? Well, Disneyland is certainly high on the list of my favorite places. Other places include the beach, the Redwood Forest, and bookstores. On a recent trip to go browse around Barnes & Noble, I couldn't help but notice the Hillary book display. First thing you see, walking in the door, right in your face, Hillary, right in your face. So what else is new? Hillary's new book, while certainly starting out with good sales, was already at Barnes & Noble marked 30% off. I would not be surprised if that soon turns to 50% off, and later on litters the bargain basement. For me, I would not buy that book even for fire kindling because I do not believe in burning books, any books, even hers. I might accept the book if I were offered money to take it off somebody's hands. But alas, with no room for this work of classic literature on my own personal bookshelf, where, oh, where would I find the book a happy home? Even so, the money would be refused unless they offered me some extra perks to go with it, such as the secret decoder ring, complimentary egg rolls, maybe a week in Hawaii. That at least would be a start. And even then, I would still have to think about it. While we're on the subject of money, I went to the post office last Thursday afternoon. Yes, this is how my story begins. I went to the post office last Thursday afternoon in order to send a recently published complimentary book to a friend. As our saga continues, I walked inside and waited in line to have the mailer weighed and purchase the correct amount of postage. Unbeknownst to me, I was about to make one of our poor postal workers very unhappy. What was my mistake? Now, hold on to your seats. You're not going to believe this. What was my fatal mistake? Ladies and gentlemen, I paid with a $20 bill, even though the postage only cost 3 dollars. Oh, my sweet Lord, why I should be drawn and quartered. The annoyed-sounding worker said, don't you have anything smaller? I don't, I replied. And that was all he heard from me because I happily confess I felt zero obligation to apologize. Now, look, I realized that in a world of ATM and credit cards, people do not see as much cash these days, and they have to make change, and that can be a hassle. But it's not like I handed the guy a $100 bill. It wasn't even a 50. This was a 20, for crying out loud. And frankly, no matter what I had handed him, no matter what the size of the bill that I put in the hands of the poor, poor postman, you will pardon me if I choose not to lose sleep over using legal government-issued tender at a government office. Now, I am sympathetic to the idea of people being inconvenienced. I am. And so, if the U.S. Post Office really wants to go there, I am only too happy to oblige by sharing fond, tender, nostalgic memories of their stellar service over the years. While we're on the subject of well-managed organizations, there's the NFL. Now, over a month ago, on September the 28th, I wrote the following on my Facebook page. I'll read it to you. Just watch. Some genius executive at the NFL will propose a solution for the sake of unity. It will be to just discontinue the Pledge of Allegiance and National Anthem altogether. Regardless of where our sympathies and concerns are over this controversy, we can be sure of two things. One, that decision will be about as unifying as two lovers attempting to communicate by shouting at each other from opposite sides of the Grand Canyon. Two, cowardice, rather than concern for unity, will be the true motive if the history and backpedaling of this issue serves as a predictive barometer. Interesting how the left has made three discoveries lately. One, Russia really is a threat. Two, perhaps football isn't such a violent, evil activity after all. Not if people are using it to rip on the country. And three, free speech. The left has, you know, they've discovered free speech now. Of course, now that evidence has finally been unearthed for Russia collusion, but not the way it was supposed to be unearthed. Now that evidence has been found, but the wrong evidence for the wrong candidate, rather than the candidate that the mainstream media had been hoping for, it's a whole different story, which leads to yet another prediction I placed on Facebook. I said, those same pundits and politicians who were concerned about collusion with Russia when Trump was being accused will now say on TV, while being asked about the evidence for Hillary campaign's collusion, the American people are ready to move on. After all, the election is over. Time to put partisan politics aside and just get back to the issues. Well, that one has already happened. Not that it was a difficult prediction to make. It was not difficult to make at all. And now let me introduce a man whose predictions are much more substantial than that. He predicted Donald Trump would beat Hillary just a few weeks, or just around this time last year, a few weeks before the 2016 election. He predicted it. Almost every other media pundit was stupefied. Joining us today, contributor for National Review and rotating co-host Mike Friedenberg, not to be confused with his wife, Michaeline Friedenberg, who guest hosted for me in my absence 2 weeks ago on this program. So first names may sound alike, Michael, Michaeline, and their last name may be identical, Friedenberg, but I seriously doubt that anyone will ever get their personalities confused. Mike, welcome back to our program.
Thank you, Bob. That's pretty funny. Actually, on certain types of computer printouts, both of our names come out as Mitcha, M-I-C-H-A.
Mitcha.
So it doesn't make the full name. So when you look at them, it's Michaeline and Michael are indistinguishable.
Well, that would be pretty funny if it wasn't reminding me of Mitcha O'Connell and how I feel about him these days.
Okay, Mitcha O'Connell. But if you meet my wife and myself, you also will not confuse us visually.
You won't confuse you visually. I don't think you'd confuse the two of you in any way, shape, or form.
Yes. She's a bit more svelte than I am. Let's just put it that way. So I will make one more prediction before I get going on another topic I want to talk about is that you also know that, you know, what a surprise, a leak happened. Just the timing was just a complete accident on the Mueller investigation, leaking the fact that they've issued indictments, you know, out of the grand jury, potentially to possibly arrest anybody, you know, somebody, you know, involved with something to do with Trump, whether it's financial, you know, from 50 years ago. When his dad was
and it's going to be the kind of thing where somebody claimed he had a salami sandwich for lunch and it was really a ham sandwich, that kind of lie.
My prediction is that it will have little to nothing to do with the Russian collusion story.
No,
because
but,
if it did.
But MSNBC and CNN and the New York Times will make a big issue out of it, though, and they'll act like it's a smoking
gun. But it won't have anything to do with the Russian collusion, because if it was something to do that legitimately had to do with anybody associated with
Trump, they would have come up with it by now.
It would have been leaked out long ago.
You think it'll be Paul Manafort?
I have no idea if it'll be Paul Manafort or not, but it won't really be anything to do with Trump and Russian collusion. It'll be something, some tangential issue, you know, of the rogue special investigator. And let's just talk about this special investigator for a second.
Yeah, Mueller. Because Mueller knew a lot of the stuff they're coming up on Hillary. Mueller knew about.
Mueller was there, and regardless whether the fact that he didn't say anything, he is part of the cover up of Russian collusion story with Hillary Clinton, as well as Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general that appointed Mueller, as well as a lot of other people here. So I'm going to say this. It looks much more like this whole special counsel and the team was assembled potentially to ferret out potentially damaging information to Mueller and his friends and the Clintons to cover it up. I mean, they really have not been able to come out with anything in any investigations on Trump colluding with the Russians. What was the purpose of this investigation?
Yeah, and you know, Mike, the scandals that they were involved with, and Hillary has been involved with so many of them. Many of them Obama was just as involved with, even though his name isn't being bandied about nearly as much. Just a plethora of them. And when you wonder, how could they have done things so obvious and outrageous? I think it's because they never expected to lose this election. So they just assumed nothing would come of it. And when Trump won, panic ensued, and they had to find a way to change the narrative right away. And the best way to do that was to deflect all the guilt Trump's way.
Exactly. It was an act of misdirection. And the confidential informant has stated that in terms of all the corruption, the bribery, the blackmail, that Obama was receiving those briefings on a daily basis.
He had to have been. And when they want to claim they didn't know, like Obama with every scandal during his reign, I didn't know. I was shocked. We have to choose between them being either completely incompetent and ignorant or downright lying. But of course, they were downright lying. We'll be right back.
Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. WisdomWorks Christian Preschool.
Dave Brubeck, representing a much simpler time in our country's history, here to talk about our present, current events, however, Mike Friedenberg.
Well, Bob, there is so much to talk about, but I had to narrow it down. So I definitely, the next segment, I want to be talking about a great article that a friend of mine did for American Spectator, Steve Baldwin, former state assemblyman.
Yes, Steve's been on our show before.
Yes.
Great guy, Steve.
And he was recently on the John and Ken show, too.
Oh, really?
The Mob, yeah. So he did a really good job there. My wife heard him while he was driving. So
are John and Ken still fairly conservative these days? They have been on some issues, at least.
They're generally, listen.
It's been a long time since I've heard
They're very
John
much anti-establishment, so you will find yourself aligned with them.
Yeah,
90%
they're probably
of the
at least not very politically correct, even if they don't hold to all of our conservative
They're very
values.
Politically incorrect. Yeah, yeah. And yes, definitely. So it's, they hate politicians, but they actually respect Steve Baldwin, which is high honor to get a former politician or recovering politician such as Steve Baldwin. They definitely were very nice to him. So, but anyway, what I want to talk about now, though, is I want to talk about a speech I heard. I'd heard that it was a good speech, so I actually went on to YouTube and I looked it up, and the speech was by Steve Bannon to the California State Republican Party Convention on October 20th in Anaheim, and he was the keynote speaker for the
So this was something recent. This wasn't back in the election
2017.
Okay.
And Steve Bannon was the keynote speaker, and you know, you basically, if you're a member of the California State Party, you're either elected or you're appointed to represent and be the governing body for the Republican Party in the state of California. So a lot of people there that are influential in the Republican Party. Unfortunately, the Republican Party is not as influential as it used to be in the state of California. But nonetheless, it was a good turnout. And he gave what I thought, I think it's a speech that every Republican and conservative should hear. I was aware of Steve Bannon and know that he's a smart guy. And I read some stuff he's written, but I had not heard him speak publicly before. He is a fantastic public speaker, very powerful, very polished, and what he said was profound. A lot of things he said, but it was actually interesting, a party of unity in many respects, talking about how established Republicans, libertarian-leaning Republicans, mainstream conservative Republicans, all of us, if we want to win, we have to work together. And he ultimately said that to a large degree, just with some notable exceptions, that we did work together in the 2016 election to get Donald Trump elected, and that we could not have gotten him elected without a high level of cooperation. He talked about the Republican National Committee coming on board with Reince Priebus and, supplying some excellent staff and getting things rolling.
Priebus came on board, but some of the notable exceptions were very notable, like Romney and George W. Bush, who was silent for the 8 years of Obama, because that's the respectful thing to do. And all of a sudden we're hearing all about him with Trump before and after Trump gets elected. I mean, they're pretty notable exceptions.
That was too bad. I've always had my issues with George W. Bush's handling of the economy and a few other things.
He at least seemed like a person of personal integrity.
But the last speech he gave was, very much, it disappointed me. So, but with that said, going back to the Bannon speech, So the speech was, talked about unity, and he was basically said, doesn't believe in moral victories. The kind of winning he likes is the winning kind of winning, not the moral victory, but the victories. So good speech, very interesting, only about 40 minutes long. But one of the things he said that just struck me, because it was so profound, and he said it in such a few words, and there's so much in these words that I want to explore these words, for this segment. And what he said is he said, and I'm not sure if he's the first one who said it, but he said it in such a way that it really struck me. We are not an economy. We are a country. And this so resonated with me because over the years, I've come to believe that the conservative movement in this country has largely lost its way. And one of the reasons
they've abandoned a lot of the social issues I'm an economic conservative.
That's not even quite the full thing here, because there is a lot of conservatives that still stand strong on the social issues. They're pro-life. You know, obviously the Second Amendment people, things like that. But what's happened is that we've had an elevation and a view of the market that I think has got far beyond what a conservative who actually believes in rights that come from God and understands man's true nature, which is sinful,
and greedy,
imperfect, and greedy, that it goes beyond that. And what has happened is a large part of the Republican Party, the conservative movement, has substituted the conservative view of the market, which is a balanced, moderate view of the market, and a lot of respect for the market, certainly, for a libertarian view of the market, which is a utopianist view of the market, a secular humanistic view of the market. And so they have put the market up on a pedestal. And I will say that this is something that I myself did for many, many years as a Republican. I can remember a moment, aha moment, an epiphany when I was talking to a professor of law, libertarian-leaning professor of law, about trade issues. And I suddenly came to the realization that it reminded me of a conversation I'd had with a communist, because we were talking about the issues, we were going back and forth, and he kept elevating the market up into the place into such a level that if I had substituted the word God for it and the power of the market was equivalent to that of God, practically, in talking to this gentleman. Great guy, conservative across the board, but his view of the market was highly inflated.
Now, since communists don't believe, at least on paper, in a free market, how was he sounding
it was reminding me of the pattern. When I would talk to communists, they would say, well, we've never really tried communism, and if we just try it, it will really work.
So the analogy was
if we haven't really had a true free market society, but if we just try it, it will work, and everything will be wonderful.
I mean, libertarians, obviously, I think as conservatives, we both agree, libertarians say a lot of things that resonate with us, but they do have trouble explaining how it would ultimately work. And there are times when it just breaks down.
They will give you most libertarians are very bright people. They will give you very complex explanations and well thought out explanations how everything will work out, but they're still fundamentally wrong because no matter how complex that you can say in a book, even a 1,000-page book, the real world and the complexity of human nature are far more complex than anybody can put down into a book. And the history shows that there's times when the market cannot handle man's greed, that the market will not make up for wrongdoing, and that do need some government intervention at times.
And there's a balance. We don't want to sacrifice ideals for the real world, but on the other hand, if ideals can't work, then that's a problem too. We'll be right back. Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
Not sure when to try an unusual novel? Let the customers speak for themselves.
Here's another Amazon customer review for Bob Siegel's latest book, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. While there is nothing in this book that would stop you from giving it to or reading it to your kids, this book will certainly hold an adult's interest as well. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has it all. Magic, talking cats, bullies who get their comeuppance, fun dialogue, and a good story. Do not let the title fool you. While Christmas does play a prominent role, this is really not a Christmas story, and it can be read at any time of the year, except February 31st. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, co-hosting to me with me today, Mike Friedenberg. We're talking about the virtues and the sometimes falling apart and not being well put into actionness of libertarianism.
Yeah, and let me just say that I've worked in politics and been active in campaigns and worked with many great libertarians. They're great folks. They're allies.
Some of your best friends are libertarians?
Some of my best friends are libertarians or have libertarian leanings. So, but there is this issue that I want to talk about, which I just, and some of my great friends have sort of these libertarian leanings, and they're great folks. They're moral people. They're principled people. It's just, I think that this is sort of snuck in, and I just want to bring it up for people's consideration to think about. Anyway, going back to what Steve Bannon said, he started off saying, we are not an economy. We are a country. We have a social fabric and a civic responsibility. Then he said, by the way, I'm a free market capitalist, as most of you are. That's the underpinning of our society. So a lot of respect for the free market, but we are a civic society. It's more than an economy. And economic nationalism, looking out for our fellow men to make sure that manufacturing jobs that we allowed to go to Asia come back to the United States of America, is something that we have a moral obligation to do. And I want to talk about that a bit, because what I've come across is a mindset that's become very prevalent in the Republican Party that, and I call it, it's not even true libertarianism, because they ignore the fact that our relationship with China is nothing to do with free market relationship, and that China itself is not a market economy.
And some of those trade agreements where we're told how much we have to equally distribute our trade with other nations, some of those ones Trump's trying to overturn, they don't sound very libertarian to me.
Well, they're
not.
And having a large internationalist body that's, you know, that's consumed with politics, i.e. the World Trade Organization, WTO, is not a very libertarian or free market system at all. But it's highly defended many times by organizations that you think wouldn't defend it. So it's kind of surprising, but I've had a number of debates with people, and here's what we come down to. And this has happened over the years. I've had a debate. I've shown them that the China trade policies have nothing to do with the market, that China doesn't give a hoot nanny about the free market, and that China has a Confucianist mercantilist system that is completely predatory and does not believe in comparative advantage. In fact, is going for absolute advantage. Those are economic terms. And yet they still support the status quo. And I had a debate with somebody, and they said, well, I don't care if China subsidizes an industry to the degree that destroys our own local industry and moves there, and they're only because of subsidies, because we actually have many industries that, because of the cost of transportation and materials, the goods could be made here in the United States cheaper, but they aren't being made here in the United States only because China subsidized it. Cheaper raw materials, actually just direct dollars, you know, subsidies, cheap rent, all that kind of stuff. So unfair trade practices. And I said, well, what about that? And I said, we really, and they said, well, what they've told me is, well, as long as I can buy the good here in the United States for cheaper than I would have otherwise, I don't care. I don't care if it's not really free market. And ultimately, what they're also saying is, I don't care the fact that that factory moving over there threw thousands and thousands of American workers out of work. And right now, the locuses where we have these massive opioid addiction problems are these areas where towns were completely and utterly devastated by the rapid loss of manufacturing jobs. There were no equal jobs that they could get. They could have just become a highly paid programmer. And when I hear Republicans say that, it's the equivalent of, you know, was it Queen Victoria saying, if they do not have bread, let them eat cake? It's that same kind of mindset. So our fellow Americans were devastated. And, you know, when you think about a guy who's got a job, a good, solid job providing for his family.
And then he gets outsourced.
Then he gets outsourced. Now he has to go get, you know, state aid for medical care. Just think about the devastating blow that is. And yet I see a lack of empathy in the Republican Party on this. And what I'm going to say here is, number one, many of those jobs, if China has not been subsidizing, could have stayed here. But number two, as a conservative, we don't just look at the economic side of things. We look at the broad range of things, what's good for society in general, and we make public policy on that basis. We look at the spiritual side of things. For example, work is good for the soul. Well, the contrary to that is not working is really horrible for the soul. It's devastating.
Our welfare state has proven that.
And it's the welfare state there. And what we've done is we've taken people who wanted to work and were working hard and had the pride of being the breadwinner and, the you know, bringing home the bacon for the family, now not working. That has been devastating to our country. Now, Trump, somehow, even though he was raised very wealthy, seemed to have understood that.
He seems to have always had an empathy for the little guy and the worker.
Yes.
Like, it's almost like he never took his wealth for him. Let me play the devil's advocate with you for a moment, though, because when you talk about conservative values, I think we sometimes have to compartmentalize what would be a value, what we would want to encourage people to voluntarily do, to say to somebody that's the owner of some company, it is wrong to outsource other people's jobs. But when we get into the question of how much the government should be involved, I don't have a problem with Trump sitting these people down and saying, look, if you keep your companies here in the United States, I'm going to make it worth your while and give you some tax breaks. But if we were to go so far as to say your government is going to penalize you, then I'm just wondering, is there a difference in your mind between what we would say is the moral right thing to do and what we would say is the government's job to get involved? Where would that tension work out in your mind?
Absolutely. There is a balance there.
Yes.
And number one is we need to get this tax reform package through because that will make it much more competitive for business.
Because that goes to the heart and soul of why people were outsourcing in the first place.
One factor. China, though, whether we had this 20% rate, we would still have lost jobs because China was willing to do massive subsidies to pull companies over there. Recently, a major solar company moved over to China, and the president even admitted, he said, it's not because of the labor costs, it's because China's going to give me massive subsidies. And that pulled thousands of high-paying, high-tech jobs out of the country. So we have to look at all the factors. But yes, we have to make it as business-friendly as possible in the country. If we need to give tax incentives, we want to do everything we can to incentivize people to stay here. Now, and there will be some industries and some jobs that it will make more sense to go to a country with a lower labor rate. But we're not at that point because right now the idea was to have the lower value jobs, the ones that were not the heavy duty high-tech manufacturing, and stay here, and the lower, you know, labor intensive jobs be in China. That's not what's happened. China has gone for the whole kit and caboodle. Through forced technology transfer and steam lift technology, they have upgraded their manufacturing at the expense of the United States manufacturing base. They've literally stolen manufacturing technology and stolen intellectual property.
Okay, conservatism and the economy through the lens of my friend Mike Friedenberg. More when we return. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others sadly do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
Siegel Show, co-hosting with me today, my good friend Mike Friedenberg, contributor for National Review.
So, Bob, we were talking about balanced conservatism. And I'm going to say that all the things I'm talking about, the things that I now think don't make sense from a conservative perspective, I was there at one point. And in fact, I can remember feeling guilty when I started to move away from the viewpoint that the market was all powerful and omniscient.
Conservatism became such an idol. It was like
I remember literally feeling guilty. And then one of the things I realized, and I think it may have even been a revelation practically from God, is that I had put the market into a point and place that was actually idolatrous. I mean, I had put it up at a pedestal that made it an idol.
I think with any moral principle, sometimes if we latch on to that to the degree where we don't look at other moral principles, and sometimes they are in a little bit of tension with each other, it's something that we should take caution of, because if we get so fascinated by one idea that we look at everything else in life through the lens of this one idea, then I do think our vision becomes a little bit impaired.
Absolutely. There is a tendency to try, with some conservatives, certainly with libertarians, to try to break everything down by looking at it from an economic perspective. And it is a powerful perspective. I mean, it is powerful and you can do a lot with it. So I'm not going to deny that. But one of the things that I've come to the conclusion over the years is that conservatism should not be a rigid ideology. There are certainly base principles, core principles, and a true conservative starts with God as the origin and the basis from which all rights flow. But with that said, a true conservative is also a moderate. A conservative is a moderate because they live in the real world. They realize that when you're talking about human natures, coming up with hardcore fast rules on complex systems is a mistake.
And I know you mean a real moderate. A lot of the people that call themselves moderates today, they keep moving more and more to the left. They may not be quite as much to the left as some Marxists, but if the left moves more left, they keep moving a little bit to the left to stay halfway between the left, which keeps moving, and the conservatives that don't go anyway. So I meet moderates all the time, and they talk about it, and they pat themselves on the back, and I never hear one moderate word come out of their mouth. So you're making a case for a different kind of moderation.
No, and I'm just saying a true conservative. I'm talking about somebody that adheres to the value of life, somebody believes in the Second Amendment. But even with all that said, there is a moderating element.
Moderation of the way we're looking at the economy,
moderation,
and not making the free market into an idol.
And also when you look at public policy things and things like that, because there's – you know, try to coming up with absolute principles when you're dealing with the complexity of humanity is difficult once you start reaching into constructs, human constructs. So that's what I will say there. And it's also, you know, Paul said moderation in all things.
The Apostle
right?
Paul.
Apostle Paul.
For
right?
Those of you who are conservative but not necessarily New Testament readers.
Yes. So the Apostle Paul said that. So and I do think that there's – and I would even say, though, that's kind of thought about it, that there is the possibility of – applying that rule in moderation as well. There may be a time for a bit more extremism, but that would still be a moderation in that there's only a specific amount of time for that.
Well, and you know, when you go back to the Bible, and this takes us away from Paul and goes to the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes had that famous passage that the birds made into a song,
right?
A time for war, a time for peace. There are times where we have to say, what season is it right now? And what is the priority today?
So it's a very complex topic, but I will just say this. I truly believe that the Republican Party has lost its way since Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan really did care about the blue collar and the working class. That's why he received actually union endorsements. He won the blue collar vote overwhelmingly.
Well, we and had since, what they called the Reagan Democrats yes, and, that put
and,
him
and
in office.
And since then, we saw the bleeding of our support from that segment because, frankly, the Republican Party was hostile to the working class people. And we sounded very callous, very callous. We didn't care that they lost their jobs. And, yeah. and all we cared, we said, well, yes, the principle of free trade. But once again, even if it was truly free trade, we could moderate it a bit and say yes, but we also have to think about the impact upon our fellow Americans. But once again, it wasn't even free trade. So, well, I just think that we need to get back to, as conservatives, to looking at the whole picture through the venue of the spiritual dynamics, the economic dynamics, the, you know, a lot more than just being purely economic. And also have some empathy for our fellow people and ask ourselves, you know, even if it costs us 5% more to buy a widget, but yet it keeps a person employed in the Rust Belt and their job so they can take home the bacon for their family, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with thinking that way. And I truly believe that's truly conservative thinking.
I agree. And I think the reason so many Republicans and conservatives felt literally sideswiped by Trump from out of nowhere during the last election is that he had his hands on the pulse of the people, and the Republicans had lost it.
Yes.
They were no longer in touch with that pulse.
So, but that's just, as I said, food for thought. You know, can we broaden how we look at things a little bit and not be made not so narrow and rigid in ideology on some of the market stuff? Once again, saying that I agree the market is the best vessel for just you using and capital and creating wealth, and you're never going to create wealth for the government. So there's always going to be a tension and a balance there. But now I want to talk about a great article that my friend Steve Baldwin, former assemblyman from here in San Diego, did for American Spectator.
Okay, and let me just say right now, we'll put a link to this article on my website on the programming notes where today's radio show will be posted. So
okay, great. Thanks, Bob. That'd be great. So anyway, Steve wrote an article about, and the name of the article is A Further Perspective, and his article is Adios, California. So it's not a very happy article about the state.
Oh, I can see right there. He used the word adios. He's a racist.
Well, actually,
cultural co-opting. He's not Hispanic, and he used the word adios.
Yes, you got me on that one.
They'll probably never even read the article. That'll be the response just to the title.
So it's a good article, and he actually quotes another friend of mine in it, Richard Ryder, the well-known libertarian activist, you know, here in town. Richard's a great guy.
Oh, yes. He's
and
one
somebody
of the,
that I, you know, we've been on the same side.
Yeah, he and
of
I both
many
contribute
times.
To the San Diego
yes.
Rostra.
So, but anyway, he writes about an article from by Carson Bruno in Real Clear Markets. And here's the quote: using the cost of living. Well, anyway, I guess the context is that California always brags about how it's the sixth largest economy in the world. Okay.
And, not with half the people moving to Texas.
Well, it is. But that's something we should talk about too, because we have been losing a lot of good people from California, and it's huge. But what Carson Bruno says is that using the cost of living adjusted data from the International Monetary Fund and adjusting California's gross domestic product data provides a better snapshot of California's economic standing in the world. And when you do that, California slips from the sixth largest economy to the 12th largest economy, a drop of six spots. That actually puts us below Mexico. California is now we don't have as many people as Mexico, but it puts us below Mexico. Now, that's interesting. Now, however, he also points out that 50% of California's private industry and real GDP growth comes out of Silicon Valley. So if we remove those mega Silicon Valley companies, some of those tech giants that are stepping in, influencing the political process, by the way, by how they do search engine technology, things like that, then we begin to look much less attractive as an economy. We'll talk a little bit more
about
some of those
factors.
Okay,
yeah, I want to get your take on what you think the future will be of California when we return. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Bob Siegel. Buying or selling a home? Feeling overwhelmed? Facing what seems like unlimited choices? Believe me, your first and most important step is to find the right person to represent you and look out for your interests. Somebody who will help you save money while buying or make money for you when you sell. So listen carefully as I offer the best housing advice you're ever going to hear. What you want to do is contact Realty Executives All Area, and you want to ask for my good friend, Fred Falduti. Fred has managed literally hundreds of real estate transactions in the San Diego area and has handled just about any scenario you can imagine. Believe me, folks, you don't want to navigate the landmines of this economy without a skilled and experienced guide. But Fred is so much more. He will look after your interests as if they were his own. Give him a call or contact him online. Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com.
Check out these terrific customer reviews for Bob Siegel's science fiction novel, Push the Winds Around. Another winner from Mr. Siegel. I've always loved the time travel stories, and this one takes a creative approach. Like H.G. Wells' classic, it delves into morals and metaphysics. And as any good time travel mystery, it leaves you satisfied while raising questions at the same time. Here's another review. Quick, thought-provoking, enjoyable read. And just one more. My kind of book. Adventure, fun, excitement, suspense, time travel, love, and a day at the beach. What's not to like? A great book to lose yourself in. Happy reading. Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Time goes by ever so quickly. We are down to our last segment. We were talking about California and an article that your friend and my friend Steve Baldwin wrote about California.
Yeah, so anyway, Steve is an inveterate researcher. I mean, he's one of the best researchers I know. So when he researches things, he does a good job. But in his research, he ends up citing economic blogger Richard Ryder, whom we know quite well here locally. And Richard Ryder points out that looking at an aggregate gross domestic product statistic is not really a very good indicator of the state's economic health, especially when you have one industry segment that seems to be propping it up. So California has over 39 people. That's more than any other state. So a more accurate assessment of the health of California is to look at per capita income. What's the actual per capita income? So in this case, what we find out is that when you address, you know, everything for cost of living, the Golden State, i.e. our state, ends up number 37 in per capita income here in the United States, only number 37. So 37 states ahead of us have a higher GDP per person than we do. And in fact, even states that have been hit by our, you know, anti-worker policies promoted by the Republican Party, such as Michigan and Ohio, that have lost all the manufacturing jobs, they are ahead of us in GDP still. And we're right around there. We're just a little bit ahead of New Mexico, which Richard Ryder describes as impoverished. So
now, before you said, you just said New Mexico now, and you said Mexico before. Did you mean the country of Mexico, or did you mean the state of New Mexico?
I talked about the overall gross domestic.
So you were talking about the country of Mexico.
The country of Mexico as compared to the state of
California. That's what I thought, but because you just said New Mexico, I wanted to make sure.
We're going to talk about GDP. Yeah. So that when you look at GDP stats for the rest of the world, we rank number 19th out of the countries. So, you know, once you start breaking things down a little bit, you know, California, you know, bragging about California is the sixth largest economy in the world. You know, it looks great from afar, but when you start getting closer, it's not that rosy. But you and I have friends that have escaped. And I like to call
escaped,
you remember the movie Escape from New York?
I do remember that.
Well, it's like we have this, people are escaping from California.
And they also had a sequel called Escape from Los Angeles. That's becoming even more apropos.
Well, people are escaping from California. At the company I work for, where I make my money, I won't mention the name, but I have a number of people that work there that have left California, places like Texas and Utah. And these are people that are high income people that have a, you know, provide a lot to the tax base, whatever state they go. Yeah. They have fled. Now, one of them fled because of the economic things. The other one fled because he has kids and he did not want them in the wacky public schools.
Yeah, some of these laws are making about the genderless bathrooms and things like that.
And then I have other friends, you know, like our mutual friend Dave Varga took a look at what's happening here in California.
And he lives in Texas now.
He's got out of here. So what we have is the productive sector leaving. And that's another part of what Steve's talking about. The productive net contributors to the California economy are leaving. And the net takers, the people that are going to cost a lot more in the long run to take care of, are staying.
You mentioned Silicon Valley being one of the sustainers. I would argue that Hollywood sustains an awful lot of income in Southern California, too, just because the motion picture industry is so eclectic when you look at the stagehands and the makeup artists.
It's a large industry segment. It's not as big as Silicon Valley. But there is a lot of overlap between the two nowadays, too, because of the technology, you know, computer-generated graphics. There's a lot of overlap between
those. So what's in the future? I know California talks about seceding from the union. I can't believe the Democratic Party will let them do that because they would never win an election nationally again. But if they're calling themselves a sanctuary state and doing the idiotic things they're doing, they may not need to technically leave the union to still leave the union experientially for all intents and purposes.
I don't know how they can do that. I mean, somebody is going to have to put their foot down, and a good candidate for that relative to what we've had in the past. Now, I'm sure that we're not as far gone as the state of California when Ronald Reagan was in office. But you remember when Ronald Reagan has put his foot down on the strike by the federal air traffic controller?
Oh, yes. Yeah. He ordered them back
to work.
That
sent a very clear-cut message. Well, we need something like that.
But we have judges now telling the president of the United States what he can and cannot do. And if Trump decides to withhold federal funds, you can just bet some judge is going to say that that's unconstitutional.
Yeah, and that is going to happen. But slowly but surely, those cases are going to work their way toward the Supreme Court. And ultimately, I believe they will be resolved on behalf in the favor of the Trump administration.
If Kennedy gets replaced by a real conservative, Kennedy claimed to be a conservative when he got in, because you just never know what Kennedy's going to do on the Supreme Court.
Exactly. So. But we're headed that way. So it may not happen as fast as we would like. But you're right. The judges, the activist judges, are not even pretending to follow the law.
Oh, not at all.
They're just making up laws willy-nilly.
And everyone wants to make a name for himself and go down in history. And nobody's thinking, it gets back again to your original point, the unselfishness of where we headed as an entire society. It's not just about me. It's not just about my name. It's not just about me going down in history. It's where's America going to go in history?
Well, for right now, you know, I love living in California. I love living in San Diego, but we have this really negative dynamic. We have people I just don't consider to be all that sharp. Not forgetting about that they're on the opposite side of
you. You mean some of the people in Sacramento are not the brightest, sharpest tools in the shed?
No, they're not. And they're also liberal ideologues or leftist ideologues. So we have that. But so we have this awful negative downward spiral where California has to raise the tax and have very high tax rates. That forces, you know, productive people, small business people, the people that could really contribute to the economy, to leave there. So now you've got less of a tax base, but California doesn't want to cut spending. So what they do is they raise the taxes more, which means it forces people that were saying, I can stay here now, I can barely hang on, it forces them out. So you basically get a shrinking tax base, and California incentivized to keep, you know, throwing taxes on top of the shop and driving the productive people out of the state. And that's just a death spiral for the state. So California can't succeed and be viable right now. They're not a viable entity. They've got to stay in the country. And like you said, the National Republican Democrat Party would freak at the thought of losing California.
Well, Mike, we're good friends, so I'm going to put you on the spot. I know you had a lot of material you didn't get through. I think you should come back next week and finish. I don't want you to feel any pressure, though, Mike.
Okay, well, Bob, I guess I can come back next week.
Okay, we'll see you next week, everybody.
And I'll be privileged to do so. Thank you, Bob.
All right. Okay.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.